Emperor Concerto, the Piano Concerto No. 5 in E-flat by Beethoven. Emmanuel Ax was the soloist, and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra was conducted by Andre Previn. And that's Saturday Classical for this week. Stay tuned for Stardate with Joel Block, and then Brain Damage here on 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate April 16th. 12 people have walked on the moon. One of them, John Young, visited the moon twice before he had a chance to stroll on the lunar surface. Young was a member of the crews of Apollo 10, the mission that went to the moon and tested the lunar lander without actually touching down. And he was an astronaut of Apollo 16. Apollo 16 was launched on this date in 1972. During the mission, though, it looked like Young might have the same fate as James Lovell, the only other astronaut to visit the moon twice. Lovell never made it out of lunar orbit. He was on Apollo 8, the first mission to orbit the moon. When Lovell returned on Apollo 13, an explosion on the spacecraft en route to the moon ended any chance for Apollo 13 to try a landing. The astronauts were happy just to make it back to Earth alive and well. After Apollo 16 went into lunar orbit, Young and Charles Duke undocked their lunar lander from the command module. Then Ken Mattingly in the command module got a signal that there were problems with a backup engine. The two spacecraft orbited together around the moon until NASA was sure the command module would be able to bring the astronauts home. Finally, Young and Duke headed down towards the surface to become the 9th and 10th people to walk on the moon. Well, they also drove on the moon, covering over 16 miles in the lunar rover. Young tested the lunar rover by driving in circles at top speed and skidding it to see how well the wheels grip the lunar dust. Our program is Stardate. Today's show was written by Diana Hadley. Stardate is a production of the McDonald Observatory. We're at the University of Texas at Austin, zip code 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Did you say 9?
Just hold on a second.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Ah, yes. Good evening. You march right into here. At WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 13 minutes after 10 o'clock, and with us here tonight in the studio, just landing from Philadelphia, is Mike Juhas.
Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have your microphone on. Try that again.
Hello.
There you are. And Jim Wiener is here, too.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? I'm Eric Corley, here every week as usual, with Brain Damage up until midnight. Of course, if you listen to this radio station, you know we have Brain Damage all the time, but it's official during this particular time. And tonight, we are going to be talking about trains. Yes, we'll be talking about all kinds of train experiences and train facts and figures and things like that. And we invite you, our listeners, or listener, as the case may be, to give us a call and talk about trains as well. 632-6901. Thank you. Area code 516. And give us a call straight away. We'll take your call, put you on the air, and talk about all kinds of things. We not only are going to talk about trains, we're going to play music about trains.
A few.
Yeah, a few. And we have a song all ready to go right now.
Do you think we should play that song first?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, before we get into our discussion and talk and all that kind of thing, we're going to sort of kick things off with a song, and then we'll come back and talk about trains and whatever else we feel like doing. Here on 90.1 FM, WUSB.
I want to hop on the last train to the station. Won't need to get yourself prepared. When you're on that last train for glory, you'll know you're reasonably then. You ain't walked on any highway. You've just been flying in the air. But if you're on that last train to glory, you know you must pay your fare.
Who may be best known for singing another song about trains called The City of New Orleans.
But he did not write it.
No, he did not. I don't believe he ever goes around saying he did. But in fact, we'll hear that song a little later on, the original version of that really fine song. It's a fine song no matter who does it.
Right.
You know? I mean, I heard who'd I hear doing that? Steve Kreitzer? Somebody. Somebody was doing that song. They did a good job with
it. Steve Kreitzer?
Yeah. Well, whoever does the song, it sounds great.
Hmm.
I mean, we could do it now and it would sound good.
Okay.
I don't want to do it now. But,
okay.
If we did, it would sound just fine.
Wonderful, wonderful idea.
So, it's 18 minutes after 10 o'clock, and what's interesting here is that we've known each other for quite a while. You, Jim, and, Mike, Jim, and myself have known each other for quite a while, and we never really realized that we all kind of were into trains so much until we did a show a couple of weeks ago, and Jim revealed that he was incredibly into trains. Now, last time we were on, we were talking about...
This was 3 weeks ago.
This was 3 weeks ago. We were talking about the Long Island Railroad,
right,
and a couple of maybe secrets. One second. Do you hear music? I hear music.
Yeah.
Where's it coming from?
I guess it's coming from the adjacent studio.
Well, how could it be coming into the adjacent studio?
Because it's coming through the wall.
No, that's not coming through the wall. That's coming through the wiring.
Oh, I don't hear that.
Oh, that I don't hear.
I'm hearing it in my headphones.
I hear that I don't hear.
Yeah. Oh. Well, we shouldn't be hearing this.
You can almost bet it's not going out over the air.
Well, is what I'm hearing in my headphones what's going out on the air? Or
yes.
Just, oh, then it sounds clean.
It sounds clean to
yes.
you?
Yes.
All right, it doesn't sound clean to me, but I guess our listeners can verify that.
Are you in P or X?
I'm in P.
Put
no, I'm
in.
Sorry, I'm in X.
Yeah.
I put it in P. It's clean in P. But then you're hearing P, I think. You're not hearing X.
Oh, we're hearing P.
We're hearing P, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, then...
Because if I throw this button here, you hear A.
Well, of course,
which means you don't hear anything
yeah.
that I'm saying.
Well, actually, is it possible that perhaps our tuner that we monitor the station with might be just a little bit off? Or I guess it's a digital tuner.
No, it's 90.1. That's our frequency.
Last time we looked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you folks babble for a second, and
okay,
I will try
sure.
to clear this up.
Well,
sure.
You have a Long Island Railroad schedule in front
of
you.
I do. I have... this was something, actually, a copy of which...
Ooh,
or another copy
zone.
Of which... That's right, that... Eric had 3 weeks ago a city terminal zone schedule showing the stops that the Long Island Railroad makes west, including Jamaica, and west of Jamaica, the stops to Brooklyn, which is or East New York, Nostrand Avenue, and then Flatbush Avenue, and the stops in Queens at Kew Gardens and Forest Hills and Woodside, and then on to Manhattan to Penn Station. Also a stop in Queens at Hunters Point Avenue.
Which is a very popular location.
Yes, for people who work on the east side of Manhattan in particular.
Yeah, they just jump off the train there at Hunters Point Avenue and get on a number 7 train.
Right, and just take a 2 stops into Grand Central. But it also contains something that intrigued me for a long time that I finally was able to satisfy, or about which I was finally able to satisfy my curiosity. The Long Island City branch, which only operates, as does Hunters Point Avenue, during the rush hours, going westbound only in a.m. and eastbound only in p.m.
Now, I just want to say I'm back at
sure.
this point. But also, yes, I had noticed that by grabbing the... if you're in Penn Station, you really should... You owe it to yourself to grab all the schedules.
Oh, yes.
Because they're free, you know, and you got to take what you can get in this life.
And they will be collectible in one day.
Collectible?
Yes, that's true. That's right. You can give your grandchildren...
Oh, collectible. I thought they were going to come and take them.
As in collect your tickets.
There is one. It's a black one. It's called City Terminal.
Right. We were just discussing that. Yes, it was a new
movie. Oh, you have it with you?
Yes, I have another copy with me.
We'll be reading it off later then.
We're reading it off right now.
Oh, you are?
But I could wait till later, actually. You know, if we have something else on the agenda first, we could whet the audience's appetite. We can get to it later.
I was in Penn Station last night.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, they've moved the information desk finally to where it should have been the whole time,
right.
Where everybody else is, instead of in that little room off to the side. Where the
right.
police are.
Way off in the back.
Way off in the back.
That's not
all,
there anymore.
That's all closed up now, and they moved it to window 1 and 2 or something like that.
Oh, at the actual ticket?
The actual ticket place, yes.
Like the first couple of ticket windows.
Is that on the right-hand side or the left-hand side?
The right-hand side.
As you face the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And they've also put in little digital clocks so you know what time it is. Because all the other clocks are always wrong.
Like this one here.
That one, what does it say in there?
Well, right now it says 10:17, but it's been doing that since I've walked in this room.
Yeah, well, it's 10:22 now, so it's not too far off.
And you know what? I don't know if you've noticed this, but what I find very nice at Penn Station now is that when they give the announcements that a train is going to leave, they give a time check. For example, if... I don't know if I mentioned this the last time. I don't think so. If there's a train, let's say, that's going to, let's say, Ronkonkoma, let's say, at 8:15,
yeah.
Then the track announcer will not just say, all aboard track 17... he will say, the time is now 8:15, all aboard track 17.
Oh, really?
So they give every time they all aboard a train,
well,
they
now,
give the time
that's,
check.
That's interesting because I was watching a film not too long ago on Channel 5, you know, the kind of films they showed there. This one, for some reason, it revolved around Metro North, and it showed people riding in the Metro North train, which looks very much like the Long Island train.
Was that Falling in Love with
Meryl
Streep and Robert De Niro?
It was a horrible film because they just kept doing the same thing over and over again. I never really got past that.
No,
all you just
but it was great
trains.
For the train scenes.
Yeah. It was great for the train scenes, but they had the same scene at least 4 times where they saw each other on the other ends of the train. They had to go through all the commuters and everything, and the conductors taking tickets and things like that. But what was interesting there was that the conductors would say, we're in such and such a station, Croton-on-Hudson, wherever they were, and next stop will be this in 5 minutes. They don't say that in Long Island. They don't tell you. They don't give you any odds as to when you're going to get there.
No, that's true.
And I don't know if that was.
I've
based
never
on
heard
fact.
That ever anywhere.
Well, I have heard there.
well, yes,
I have heard that. Well, not only am I battling a cold here in my throat, but something is affecting my usually indistinguishable or indistinct speech is now further indistinct for some reason. But I have ridden Metro North fairly frequently in the last few years.
Oh, really?
Yes, I know some people in Westchester and do travel back and forth. And they do occasionally announce, in particular, when it comes to arrival at Grand Central Terminal, they do announce after the train pulls out of 125th Street, they'll say in approximately 10 minutes we'll be arriving at Grand Central Terminal. Mm. Which brings me to this little note here, something that I had never realized until a few years ago, the term terminal versus the term station in railroad parlance, that Grand Central Station, as people very often refer to...
That's a misnomer.
Is a post office.
It is a dead end.
Exactly.
The terminal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are tracks that, as you say, just dead end, or there are a few that turn around, but do not go any further south,
that's
basically
at
42nd Street.
I really haven't explored
it's
it.
Phenomenal,
much.
Yes. Yeah. Yes,
which station is this?
Grand Central Terminal.
Oh, yes, it is. But there's never anybody there.
No?
There's never anybody in that station.
No, seriously?
Well, I mean, I'm there late at night usually. But
well, that
oh, during the day, there's...
Penn Station, you can go there at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's packed.
Yes, that's so.
That's true,
that
because
so.
You have a lot of long-distance trains coming in and out of there, like the Night Owl going down to Washington.
That's right.
And it's Boston.
I'm talking about the Long Island section
well,
alone.
Long Island Railroad runs 24 hours, whereas Metro North stops running at 1:30 in the morning and does not run again until 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
probably.
Same with SEPTA, except they stop at midnight or so.
SEPTA, Southeast Pennsylvania Transit Authority?
Yeah, Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's something. Now, Jim, you were telling us about the Long Island City, the mystical train station of Long Island
yes,
City, which I want to see.
Wait a minute. It's not a station.
No,
isn't
that's
it?
True. It's
well,
a yard, actually.
That's right. It's the Long Island City
Mike
passenger
has been
yard.
There.
Yeah. Now, actually, on this little map, they showed that the Hunters Point Avenue station graphically is further west than Long Island City.
Right.
It's not. Because yeah. all the trains that go to Hunters Point Avenue end up at Long Island City.
Right.
And it's a little known fact that you can ride a train and not get off at Hunters Point Avenue, but go to Long Island City passenger yard.
You're allowed to do that?
Well, at least people used to do it 10 years ago when I used to ride that train.
And the conductor wouldn't tell you to get off?
No, because there's hundreds of, well, most people got off at Hunters Point Avenue, but others would go into the passenger yard there and get off and go to the next...
Vernon Jackson Avenue.
That's
stop
right, yeah, on
the
number
Flushing
7
line, yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is how I got to the yard yesterday, by taking a train from Grand Central, just one stop to Vernon Jackson, taking a subway, and then walking to the passenger yard.
Now, these trains that go up the Long Island City branch, actually that, in actual terms, is the Montauk branch.
That's right, yes. Yes.
They end up going towards Oyster Bay, isn't that right?
That's right. There are now only two trains that leave in the afternoon from Long Island City. One leaves...
Historically, there always has been, incidentally.
Just very few?
Just two, yeah.
Oh, I see. Well, they leave at 4:52 p.m., and then at 5:22 p.m., and in the morning, there's only one train, as we were discussing a few weeks ago, that goes westbound to Long Island City, and it is also an Oyster Bay train. Those trains are all Oyster Bay trains.
These are diesel trains, right?
That's right. There's no electrification on that western so-called Montauk branch.
That's incredible.
And did you know that there's actually two tracks, even though they run this short amount of trains?
Yes.
You know, the reason for that is, for all the diesel trains that they pull into the Long Island City passenger yard, those diesel engines have to go back out towards Jamaica to get reserviced for their afternoon trips.
I see.
So they take the Montauk branch from Long Island City to actually the Morris Park engine terminal.
Right, just east of Jamaica.
Just west of Jamaica.
Isn't it? Excuse me, just west of Jamaica. So in other words, they have to. What they do with those engines is they switch them back on to the other track.
That's right. Yeah, they disconnect from their trains that, say, for instance, came in from Fort Jefferson or
mm-hmm.
from Spion.
Uh-huh.
And then they go out the Long Island, the Montauk branch.
Well, what I'm curious about, Jim, is now you took this train eastbound from Long Island City.
That's
to
right.
Jamaica. What
That's
are all
right.
those other little stations? We could read those off.
Yes,
what these, are they
this
like?
Is fascinating.
Is that Haberman or Haberman?
I don't know. I would tend to think with a single consonant, the B, it would be Haberman.
Ah.
So it stops
well, we're going to get a lot of Haberman residents calling us, I think.
I would hope so. I don't know if there are any residents in Haberman.
Haberman, where is that?
Well,
in Queens?
These are all Queens stops. After Long Island City, there's a stop at Pennybridge, Haberman, Fresh Pond, Glendale, and Richmond Hill, although the afternoon, the first afternoon train does not stop at Glendale or Richmond Hill. And what, with the exception, in terms of a first impression, and perhaps Mike can confirm or not confirm this impression I had, all of the stations, other than Richmond Hill, all seemed, well, first of all the stations other than Richmond Hill were not discernible as stations that I could see. In other words, to begin with Long Island City, it is a yard, and there is a sign that says passenger yard, and you literally, as a matter of fact, you have to cross over a track to get onto the train. It's intriguing. I mean, I just loved the feel of what I was doing when I got out of the subway. I turn around, and I just see this diesel train a few blocks away, as if it's just sitting in the road there. And I walk a couple of blocks.
This is not Hunters Point Avenue.
This is no, this is Long Island City, although Hunters Point Avenue is just a 5-minute walk from the subway station at Vernon
Avenue. Is it the
Avenue
same subway station, though?
No, it's a separate station. After Grand Central's subway stop on the number 7, you have Vernon and Jackson Avenues. That's one stop.
That's the first station in Queens.
Okay. Right. And
it's underground.
Underground, that's right. You walk out, and you're right near the exit on the Queens side from the Midtown Tunnel. You're not far from that at all.
Yeah, right by Dewar's there.
Yes, and
Dewar's?
Yeah, the whiskey people.
Oh, the whiskey people, right, okay.
And there are some residents
Swing
in
Line
this
Staples,
area.
Too, aren't they? There?
That's closer to Hunter's Point.
Okay.
It's
amazing how we all know this area so well.
This is by Executone in the Bloomingdale's warehouse.
Yeah.
That's right.
And is Sternberger's warehouse still down there?
I believe it is, yes.
Do you see the skyscraper
How about
they're building?
Peter F. Mallon?
That one's new to me.
Warehouse.
They're building a skyscraper there, though, in Queens.
Yes, they
the
are.
Citicorp is something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's intriguing. But let's see, I'm almost... Oh, yes. The Hunters, you walk out, and there are some residences there, but there are also some commercial enterprises, and it seems to be some factories. It seems to be a huge power plant. This is in Long Island City. And you walk to the yards, and it's as if you're walking on the sidewalk or in the road, and all of a sudden you come upon a train, because this is all ground level, and there is not even a little curb, a raised curb, to mark it as a station. You just walk in the road, cross a track, and you get on a train. You step up the steps, and you get on a train.
You step up those steps. They don't.
That's right.
Right, okay.
Well, no, I'm sorry. What I mean is you walk up these steps the way some, well, I guess let's
as
see.
As opposed to stepping up the walk.
Stepping up the walk. Well, what I'm trying to say is that you're on the ground, and you see what, well, okay, I guess, yeah.
I think what you're trying to say, Jim, is that it's real easy just to get on the train.
Yes. Well, I think I'm beginning to really give the title of this show a lot of credence. But,
okay, now...
But you see, what I'm trying to say is that we're normally, with the diesel cars, or the passenger cars on the diesel trains, you would have a ground-level station, let's say Stony Brook, before... Stony Brook is in the process, I think, of getting
Not
a raised
yet.
Platform. But as it is now, let's say...
Well, I believe Port Jefferson's going to get a higher one.
Yes, that's
Port
right.
Jefferson already has a temporary platform that was just built.
On the west side of the...
On the west side, and they're going to be raising the track.
And they don't have to
use... raising the platform.
The platform. They don't have to use steps, of course, for that. But you do have to use steps for, let's say, the Stony Brook Railroad Station, where there is a slight raise in the platform relative to the track, whereas at Long Island City... There is no raised, a slight curb up relative to the track.
Well,
so
it's like the middle platform in Stony Brook. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever been in that platform, but there are
That's
two
right.
tracks of Stony
That's
Brook.
That's
a little
right.
platform in between.
Exactly. So you really have to step up high to get on that first step. So you're stepping right out of the road onto the train. And you're sitting there on this train, and there's this tremendous power plant with these huge smokestacks a few blocks away, and start to move, and you pass...
That's the striped smokestacks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I know where that is.
Oh, okay, I guess I didn't even remember that I had stripes. But after you pull out, you pass...
Look like a great big candy cane.
Yeah, it was sort of like Wilco used to look.
Yeah. Oh. What happened to that?
I don't know. They unpainted one of the smokestacks. No one knows why.
In Port Jefferson.
I guess they're just in a foul mood recently. But what I'm curious about, now you have these stations, Penny Bridge and
right.
Oh, incidentally,
other things.
Remember our old music director, Dana Penny?
Yeah.
Didn't he live down in that area, around Penny Bridge?
I don't know about that, Mike. I'll have to get back to you.
Okay.
But the
well,
stations...
Jack Bridge was an old music director.
The stations that you go by...
Yes.
Penny Bridge, what are the other ones?
You go by Penny Bridge...
Fresh Pond, Haberman.
Haberman, Fresh Pond, and Glendale, and Richmond Hill.
When they stop, do they call them out?
I didn't hear anybody call them out, which is why...
Does anybody get on?
Well, I imagine that some people may get on. I don't think anybody gets off. I have the feeling that these are stops... The ones from Penny Bridge to Glendale, inclusive, which are all near commercial or factory areas. In fact, they're as little defined as Long Island City is as a station, even less so are these locations. They remind me of the old Setauket station, and even less.
Remember that?
Which was, and they're even less so a station than Setauket. There have been other stations that are
at
right
least Setauket
near factories.
Had a parking lot.
Right, exactly. These don't have parking lots. It's just some gravel. And it's hard to even figure out how people get to them, but they must walk out of the factories
now,
and get on the train to go to Jamaica.
I remember...
Oh, look out.
Tunnel. I remember back in...
Sorry about that.
When I was a youngster back around in 74 or 5, actually walking along that track, and there's a Block and Guggenheimer pickle factory... that abuts up to the tracks, and I remember walking along the tracks and seeing them outside chopping up pickles.
Wow.
On wooden boards.
Wow.
Manually.
You could have gone up there and gotten it fresh from the right from the manufacturer.
Now,
in the middle of Long Island City, in the open, you know, food that you and I would normally eat.
Well, it gets washed off.
Now, before we open up the phones...
And we have them against Long Island City, by the way.
We are going to open up the phones, and some people were calling before.
But if we open them up, they won't work.
If you touch them, they won't work. But that's beside the point. 632-6901.
Just take it apart.
632-6901 is our phone number, area code 516. But I like to say something I did last night. Well, I did a couple of things last night, which were pretty interesting.
Do tell.
Well, first of all, I hung out in the post office, the main post office in New York City.
Oh, until midnight?
Until midnight. In fact, after midnight. It was the most amazing place to be because there were crowds and crowds and crowds of people.
Really? Late filers?
Oh, yeah. They were set up at desks. There were these little, like, school desks, you know, that were attached to the chair. People were sitting there filling out their tax forms. There were tables. There must have been about 500 people in the post office.
Really?
Just wandering up and down, waiting online. It was the most amazing thing happening in the city last night. And I just hung out there for a couple hours, and there were TV crews, and everyone was in kind of a weird mood.
Were there lines stretching outside?
No lines outside.
They used to have those.
Everyone was inside, and everyone seemed to be pretty much in control. A couple of people were really fed up, though. I could tell. They didn't cut it off at midnight. I talked to a cop there who said that it usually goes until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Huh. I think
they don't have
get
a chance
in there,
to change the date on the...
Right.
On the machine or whatever.
If you get in there by midnight, there's a grace period. Once, if you're inside the post office, they'll stop the clock, as it were, until your mail is processed.
I don't know how they do it, but there's really not that much of a penalty if you are late. You know, not that much of a penalty. It's not like they kill you or something. But there is an amazing machine.
No, wait a minute. In Philadelphia, they do.
Well, I'm talking about New York, Mike.
Oh, I see.
I don't know what you guys do down there. But the amazing thing in this post office, there was a machine that will tell you your 9-digit zip code.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is type in, as if you're typing in an address. You type in your name, your address, your city.
You don't even have to put your right name in.
No, you don't have to put your name in. They don't really look at that. But I was typing in names or addresses, and it was telling me the 7-digit, the 5-digit zip, and then the 9-digit zip. So it was an incredible database.
I've done
that
before. I've actually done that at the Museum of Technology, I think it was, in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
They had one of those set up. I found out the 9-digit zip code for your house.
Wow, that's pretty nice.
I forget what it was.
I remember. But in any event, that was the first thing I did. The second thing I did was I took one of the quote-unquote severely disrupted trains that went from Penn Station to Jamaica. See, they're doing some kind of work on the expressway.
Ah.
They're widening it or something like that.
The Long Island Expressway. Yeah.
So there's only access to one track instead of four.
So does that mean if I'm driving home tomorrow, I should avoid that by all possible costs?
I would always avoid the expressway. I usually recommend
Well, the
that.
Alternatives are like the Southern State and the Belt Parkway, mm-hmm. and they're no good.
Well, that's true, yeah.
You would try
why
the
are they no good?
Parkway?
There's no trucks allowed on there.
Yeah, but you have these curvy roads, and they're always having accidents. Like, there was an accident last night on the way home, on the way here, on the Belt Parkway.
Uh-huh.
You know, 3-4 cars all smashed up off the side.
Riding the train, though. It left 15 minutes early, and a lot of people didn't know that.
Oh.
Because they make them leave early because they have to go really slow and they ride on the wrong track. It took the eastbound track westbound yesterday. It didn't stop at Woodside or anything, just went right through. And they're going to be doing that for the next few weekends in April. But it was an interesting thing to do. I mean, you know, a lot of people wouldn't stay in the city until 1:30 in the morning to do that. But I just wanted to see what it was like.
Yeah,
plus, I was hanging out in the post office, so I had
you wanted to take a severely disrupted train.
That's how they described it. Yeah. That's what got my attention.
That's fitting, though, for Eric.
Well, it's smart public relations, I think, for the railroad to do that, because by using very, very negative terminology, it sets people up to expect the worst, and then if things aren't that bad, then they're pleasantly surprised.
Oh, that's true.
It's the law. The law.
Now, Mike, I believe you have a couple of stories, but let's give out the phone number again, because we
want 632-6901.
If people have questions about trains or experiences with trains, we'd love to hear about them, or just any kind of comments about trains at all. I mean, do people still ride trains? There's something about trains that you just...
Now, you sound like an Amtrak commercial.
Well, I don't want to sound like an Amtrak commercial.
It's magic.
There's something about trains, though, that is different from all other means of transportation. Yeah. People don't get that excited
about... It's like taking a land yacht. I've ridden trains from here to Los Angeles.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Can you still do that?
Oh, yeah, of course you can.
Can you get on a train and not get off the train again until
you get
to California?
You can't change
at Chicago,
right? You have to change at Chicago, yeah.
Well, do you get a sleeper type of thing?
You can do that, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I've taken a sleeper to South Carolina, back from South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Down to North Carolina, and it's nice.
Is that our house being broken into, incidentally?
No, I don't know what it is.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Oh, no need for concern. But you know, speaking of trains and post offices, and this sounds like a funny
thing. What a great idea!
To
put a post office in a train.
In a train,
railway post offices,
and they do
moving
happen,
post
yes.
office boxes.
Yes,
they not too much anymore.
They used to have
RPOs. Yeah.
Yeah, which I think was very
well,
good.
Well, speaking about that, then we'll go to the phones.
Well. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, you were going to say, you were talking about the Setauket Station before, and remember, that burnt down in 1950.
Oh, it actually burnt down?
They had a building there. And I believe somebody was telling me there was an article in the Village Times recently about somebody who actually lived upstairs in the building.
Really?
The station building. Does that sound familiar to you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Well, it might have been a different paper then.
But
a local paper. But there
for
was
the benefit of the listeners, where is the Setauket train station
Where it used to be, right off of Gnarled Hollow Road and railroad tracks.
You'll see a driveway going up there with a big tree lying across it.
Yeah, and a whole series of dirt piles.
Yeah, so you can't drive up there. You have to walk up there. But it's a great place to watch the trains go by.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
In fact, I've been seeing a lot of freight trains recently in Long Island.
Yeah, you know, a friend of mine was telling me the same thing.
Yeah, a lot. I saw one in Stony Brook the other day. I saw one in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to pass them in Hicksville, too, for some reason.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was telling me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine.
All right, let's give out the phone number.
Anyhow,
go ahead. Finish your story.
I didn't know
you were telling a story.
Yeah, the Setauket train station. I remember when I was a kid, I used to walk down there from my house. And Long Island Newsday used to throw off a bundle of papers there at the station. That's how they got their papers out to Long Island. They used to have a baggage car and just throw them off.
Oh. I mean, off the train.
Off the train, yeah. And then the carriers would come and pick them up and then take them along.
Now, let me remind the listeners who give us a call that in order to converse with all three of us, you must have your radio on, but not too loud, because if you have it on too loud, you'll get all kinds of...
Feedback,
yes. Yeah, you don't want that kind of sound, because it makes for an unprofessional sound. So call us at 632-6901. Keep your radio on just a little bit so you can converse with us, because you'll only be able to hear me in your phone, and you won't be able to hear the other folks there.
Oh, you're going to take care of it then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to handle it from here. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. My name is John Tabey, and I was listening to your conversation about the... Montauk Branch out of Long Island City.
Hi, John.
Hi.
And it reminded me of a story that a friend of mine told me once about an uncle of his who used to be a crossing guard at the Penny Bridge station. Believe it or not, they had, of course, the Long Island Railroad had crossing guards at a lot of stations over the years. I remember them at Brentwood and Central Islip and Patchogue. I think at Patchogue they probably lasted into the 60s. But this gentleman that worked at the Penny Bridge, he worked close to 40 years there, and he retired from his job as a crossing guard at the Penny Bridge station.
Are there still crossings out there?
I assume there are, but I don't think that there are any crossing guards any longer.
Now, what would a crossing guard do?
Well,
this is before the striped things came down, I guess.
I think what happened was is before a lot of the industries had built up around it. Like you said, there really is no station. It's just that there's train stops and the people get on and off.
Mm-hmm.
These crossing guards would detect the any vehicles. To watch out for the trains.
In other words, they would know that a train was coming, and instead of having the automatic gates...
Right, and interestingly, this fellow that retired as the crossing guard was also interested in tugboats and ferries and everything else,
uh-huh.
And he could pursue his interest as a boat watcher at the same time he was guarding the crossings of the Long Island Railroad.
Well, because uh-huh. That's right along... What body of water is that there?
Is
oh,
that?
That's the Gowanus, I believe, isn't
is
it? Gowanus Canal?
Isn't it Newtown Creek, or am I mistaken? Because isn't the Gowanus Canal only in Brooklyn, or does it also run into Queens?
Isn't that the border, though? I think it is the border.
Is it? Yes, at around Penny Bridge?
Hmm. I think the border is pretty close to Penny Bridge, anyway.
Yeah, not quite sure.
Oh, there may be.
Well, let me ask that caller. Have you ever taken that strange train over to Long Island City?
I haven't ever ridden any of the trains into Long Island City, but like Mike had mentioned, trains going into Long Island City come from Port Jefferson as well as Oyster Bay, and I'm not quite sure if any of the Spion trains go in there, but they may also go in there because I've seen pictures of at least 15 to 18 trains sitting in the yard at Long Island City before the rush hour to go back east in the evening.
And, of course, that was before Ronkonkoma was electrified.
Right. Mm.
So,
interestingly, too, on that that part of the Montauk Branch, that's where the freight trains also run out of Fresh Pond. They get onto the,
that's right.
The Montauk Branch and go up Mount Olivet, which is the moving grade from the city into the yards at into Jamaica and all. So the major interchange for all of the Long Island freight generally uses that portion of the line also.
And that's freight that comes down over the Hellgate Bridge, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Now, maybe one of you can help me with this. I've been wondering about this for a while. Between Jamaica and Woodside is an elevated track crossing. I just see tracks up there that cross.
Yeah, that's that Hellgate Bridge line that comes
Is that
down.
The Hellgate Bridge line? Because the Hellgate Bridge line comes in later on.
That's right.
The passenger line.
There were two sections of track from the Hellgate Bridge. One of them was the passenger line, which went into Penn Station to join the Long Island Railroad at Harrell Tower.
And the Amtrak's go down there now.
Exactly. And the other line was the freight line down to Bay Ridge, which is still in use. And I understand that at one time the Long Island Railroad was going to start operating that and actually run their own freight trains over Hellgate Bridge, although I don't know whether that has come to pass or not.
I know that years ago, many years ago, the Long Island Railroad had a freight line to Bay Ridge. I do know that and this was many years ago.
Yeah, still do.
They still do.
But I mean, in other words, you had said that they would start to run their own line.
See, right now,
line.
They run Conrail trains. Is that true, John?
Yes, that is. That's true. Conrail runs trains
over the Hellgate Bridge and
to Fresh Pond and Fremont. But the Long Island Railroad is the connection to the Cross Harbor Railroad, which pulls the cars from the Jersey side. Bay Ridge, and they interchange with the Long Island Railroad.
Do they really float too many cars across the water there now?
They are beginning to pick up business there. I understand they're floating quite a few trailers. They have a trailer terminal. It's the sort of business that, of course, that couldn't exist until the float started up again, but now that it has, people have begun to use the shorter route. Because of the fact that if they don't float the cars across to the Cross Harbor, the cars have to go all the way up to almost Albany, New York, at Selkirk, and then come all the way back down through Oak Point in the Bronx over the Hellgate Bridge. So it really is a much longer route.
Yeah, that's all since that Poughkeepsie Bridge burned down about a dozen years ago, I guess.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
That was all part of the Penn Central Force.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. Well, thanks. What city are you calling from?
I'm from Center Reach.
Center Reach, okay.
So one thing I thought I might just suggest you guys might want to kick around while you're talking about trains is just exactly what do you think the influence is
with the electrification out to the suburbs, how does that affect the ruralness of the area?
Well,
and I thought you might want to talk about that.
I'll tell you right away that I don't really like it all that much, because there's something about the diesels that I think are just amazing. The sound they make,
yes.
The horns, the rumble of the diesel. I mean, I don't want to get overly romantic here.
Absolutely.
Or anything, but it's just
well, that's only
it's something special, you know?
Eric, that's only because you don't remember steam trains.
Right, well, that's...
Well, steam trains,
right.
I don't remember steam trains, you're right.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I would like those as well. But the electric, I mean, it looks like a subway, you know? It sounds like a subway.
Right.
Sure, it's more convenient, but, I mean, what's so bad about, you know, getting off at Huntington and just getting onto another train? It's not the worst thing in the world. Although, I'll tell you, the worst thing in the world is everybody smokes now when they get off the train. And you just, you know, you can't escape it, because everybody lights up a cigarette and smokes it while they're waiting for the next train. And what do? You know,
yeah.
There's no place to go.
Well, it's better that than them smoking on the train.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. I'm not going to complain or anything, even though that's what I'm doing. But it's something to notice.
Well, my contention with the electrification and also the impending electrification of the Port Jefferson line, which is only a matter of time, is the fact that the ruralness of all the villages that the railroad goes through, they all begin to lose their charm. And when you start installing high-level platforms and blocking quaint depots like Stony Brook and St. James and Greenhorn, and put up these high-level platform monstrosities, which have no aesthetic value at all, I think basically what they're doing is they're ruining the quality of life of the people that have to live out here and look at them all.
Well said. Do you ever think they'll electrify all the way out to Montauk?
They will never electrify all the way out to Montauk.
So maybe they'll never electrify out to Port Jefferson, you know?
I think what they're doing is, it's always been my contention that when they did the electrification to Montauk, the people that used the Port Jefferson branch were up in arms because of the fact that they were a higher class communities along that line, and they thought that they should receive the superior service, and they were against the fact that the main line, which goes through predominantly lower class communities, was receiving the superior service first. So I think what the railroad is doing is, little by little, they're giving the people on the line a little of the improvements by installing these high-level platforms and the temporary service they're going to get with the supposedly FL9-powered double-decker cars, which probably will come online in several years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But and then, of course, after that, once the high-level platforms and everything else are installed, then it'll be just a matter of finding the funding to install the third rail.
Now, how hard is it to do that, to simply install a third rail from one part to another? It seems like it wouldn't be that hard.
Well, it's not hard, except that the whole process incorporates a lot of other work besides putting the third rail in. Every fifth tie has to be a long tie to accommodate the stanchions which hold the third rail.
Uh-huh.
So while the railroad is doing that, they normally completely redo the entire roadbed, which is a logical thing, because at the same time they're also replacing the rail. And at the same time, they also have to run underground cables for the power source. They have to build power stations. I don't know if you've noticed on the main line electrification, but there's probably a power generation substation at least every couple of miles. So that's one of the major outlays for the requisitioning of funds, which they have to do. Of course, they have to change all the signaling and everything else, and all of this runs into a lot of money. So it's just not a matter of putting a third rail down and running the trains.
One final thing I'd like to ask this caller, since he seems so knowledgeable about these things, is to guard against crashes like we had with Metro North recently. Is there some kind of an automatic system that prevents the trains from actually colliding? Because they mentioned in the newspapers that there's a buzzer that goes off. And a lot of times I hear this bell that sounds very much like the door closing bell, and it's followed almost always by the train braking.
Right.
Now, are we dependent on the person hearing that bell and slowing down the train? Is that the automatic system they're talking about, or is there something that will really stop the trains from
coming?
The Long Island Railroad does have an automatic train stop system, and... if train stop equipment isn't functional on the train, they have to run at reduced speeds, and they have to abide by certain other rules. But if train control equipment is in service on trains, it will provide a warning to the engineer, who is supposed to respond and the unit only gives the engineer a certain amount of time to respond to its warning. And if it, and if he doesn't, or she doesn't, since we have bisexual engineers, if they don't respond, then of course the mechanism automatically breaks the train and will stop it. But I don't know exactly what happened with the Metro North crash, whether a system was out of service or whatever, but when the train hit the first train, he was just going flat out, and I understand the brakes hadn't been applied at all.
Actually, from what I understand, what had happened with the Metro North accident was that the engineer possibly forgot to turn on what they referred to as turning on a signal system or a safety system. So apparently, and this was a New Haven division train, they are constructed, and I think they're going to change the construction of them in the future, such that a train can be run even without that system turned on. I don't know how it is in the Long Island Railroad, but possibly it's such that if the system is not turned on the LIRR, then the train can't operate, because...
Well, It's certainly not much of a safety system if they have to rely on a human being to
That's
turn
right.
the system on.
I agree. It's very ironic. What I was going to ask, I wanted to ask you something, if you don't mind staying on a little longer.
No.
Thank you. A couple of questions. There is, in regard to what Eric just mentioned about the, I guess they call it the speed control system, where...
Right.
When the engineer hears the bell go off in the cab, he is supposed to reduce speed to, a certain set speed. And as he does that, doesn't he also push an acknowledge button telling the nearest tower that he has gotten
the signal? No, what generally happens is when the speed control buzzer goes off in the cab of the locomotive, it again gives the engineer a certain amount of time to respond to it. And when he makes a brake application... to slow down the train, that automatically is telling the sensing unit that the engineer is awake, he's replying to the buzzer and everything else.
I see.
Of course, with the Long Island Railroad, as with most railroads that are operating passenger trains and they have schedules to keep and everything else, it's imperative that they operate at the maximum allowable speed because of the fact that they have to keep on time. So
right.
A lot of times what you'll find is engineers who are running so close to the speed limit, and because of the fact that their speedometers are not quite accurate, being their mechanical instruments, they may even be going slightly faster than the speed they're really supposed to be going.
I see.
So when the speed control buzzer goes off, they have to respond to that, otherwise the mechanism will stop the train.
And they don't have to, all they have to do is stop it, and you say there's no other button that they have to push as a signal. The reason why I ask is, I remember once noticing, looking inside the cab of a Metro North train, an electric, and there was a button that said acknowledge on it.
They have certain ways of acknowledging, and every railroad has different systems of acknowledging. Like I say, on the Long Island Railroad, as soon as the engineer makes an application with the brake to slow the train down, it will acknowledge the speed control.
I see.
But on other railroads, and possibly on Metro North and Amtrak, however they have it set up, a lot of the safety systems are not only for speed systems. They're systems designed to make sure that the engineer is awake and on the job. And the engineer has to do is every 20 to 30 seconds he has to make some type of movement on the control panel.
And
he can do that by making an application on the brake lever, moving the throttle position, ringing the bell, or pressing one of these buttons as an acknowledgement. And that lets the unit know that the engineer is awake, has not been incapacitated for some reason or other, if he's had a heart attack or anything else like that. And that's probably the button that you're talking about, acknowledgement button.
But, of course, I believe in the Amtrak crash, that button was jammed or something?
Well, from what I mean, on the Conrail engine?
The Conrail / Amtrak.
One of the reports I had heard was that it had been disabled, that there was a warning whistle
that was considered annoying. So I'm laughing.
Well,
it's not funny
annoying.
Because of the people that died, but I mean, it's ironic.
I should point out, Jim, you were on that train.
Yes,
you
I
were on the Amtrak train that crashed.
I was.
Pretty interesting.
I was. Unfortunately, my injury did not disable me, but I'm not making certainly not making light of it. It was horrifying. But what was so ironic was apparently ironic that they had this warning whistle in the Conrail engine,
and they had it taped up,
and it was mute. So that it would not be annoying, and the person went through the red signals and
wasn't annoyed at all.
No, not in the least.
Yeah, but you know what the situation was in that particular case is that probably if that warning buzzer or whistle were in operating condition, those three Conrail engines, when they went through the switches to come out onto the line. Directly mm-hmm. ahead of the passenger train, they did it at such a point that whether a warning whistle had gone off or anything else, that Amtrak train was so close upon them and going at such a tremendously fast speed, they would have hit them irregardless. It wasn't like the Conrail engines got out on the main line and were there for 2 or 3 minutes ahead of the train. They came out and were immediately hit by the Amtrak train.
Right. No, that sounds correct, yeah.
Now, if I could just point out something here. I happened to be speaking with an official at Conrail who was involved with the investigation of this accident. And every locomotive has what they call a speed recorder. And it's actually just a chart, a graph of the speeds that the locomotive attains and certain other functions like brake pressure and so forth. And what had happened was these Conrail engines coming down this sidetrack were going about 60, 63 miles an hour, and you saw the chart with the needle way up top there. And then when he slid through the crossover, he had already placed it into emergency, and so which means an emergency application of the brakes and a complete stop. And then there was a period of a few seconds where this tape had the graph, the chart had gone down to 0 miles per hour. And then on impact of the Amtrak train, it went bling, 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 bling. And it bounced up and down a few dozen times.
Wow. You know, now, maybe this wouldn't have helped at all, but how fast can those Conrail engines have gone? Perhaps it would have been advantageous to make them go as fast as possible so they could have not been hit as hard.
I'm sure that may have been a consideration, but I think what happened is when he realized that he had gone through the red signal, his first action was to dump the air and hit the brakes. Whereas if he might have speeded up, he might have lessened the impact, so to speak.
But then again, it could have happened on the bridge.
Exactly. It could have been worse that way.
Much worse.
Yes. Right. And what's another irony, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but that struck me was that Amtrak has automatic braking equipment on its rolling stock. In other words, the train that I was riding on that crashed into the Conrail engines had automatic brakes on it. Had the engineer on that train disobeyed a red signal, that train would have been stopped automatically.
So an Amtrak can never crash into another Amtrak.
Exactly. And ironically, Amtrak allowed Conrail, or in other words, another agency, to use rolling stock on its right-of-way without automatic braking equipment. And that's had the Conrail engine had an automatic brake on it, when he passed that first red signal, he probably wouldn't have made it to the siding.
But you know, interestingly too, and that's why they call these things accidents. If the Conrail engines would have gone through the signal earlier, before the Amtrak train had passed a previous signal, that signal would have stopped the Amtrak train.
Right.
But because the Amtrak train was already past its last signal, the engineer knew that he had a clear track, and he didn't know that those engines were coming out. And I think the most tragic part of the entire accident was when that engineer on the Amtrak train was barreling along at 130 miles an hour, and he saw those Conrail engines come out in front of him. He knew he bought the farm.
Yes, it was just horrendous.
Yeah, it was a terrible tragedy for him, especially.
Absolutely. Considering that he would presumably have been following his signals properly.
Exactly.
But whenever you're driving something at 130 miles an hour, I don't know, it's you must have some feeling when you're in that engine all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, again,
because you know, cars get in front of you sometimes.
People jump
in front of you.
Well, cars won't get in front of you.
Not on that particular stretch, but it does happen.
Yes.
And that must be something psychological when you're a train engineer.
That's sort of the instance that they're playing up in Mineola. And I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but you know they've had a lot of tragic train car accidents at the grade crossings at Mineola.
Oh.
And the thing that I always found interesting about grade crossing accidents is the fact that if the car was not on the grade crossing, it would never get hit. And that's why the railroad installs the gates.
Yes.
Of course, if the gates are faulty, then the railroad is really to blame. But if people continue to drive around gates
yes.
that are lowered, they are going to get hit by a train because trains do not chase cars down the street.
Right. Right.
That's a good thing, I think.
Right. No, well put.
I thank God for that.
Well put.
I want to thank the caller for giving us all this expertise. We do want to get on to some other calls.
Oh, okay. I had wanted to ask if, you know, there's one more
go
question
ahead, go
that
ahead.
Intrigued me about.
This will be your last question,
yes,
Jim.
I'm sorry.
Last it.
I'm sorry. The FL9s that you made reference to, that they're going to be using double-decker.
Mm-hmm.
You mean passenger cars?
Yeah, what they're going to do is FL9s, if you're not familiar with them, FL9s were originally built for the New Haven Railroad in, I believe it was 1959 or something like that. So it's not a new technology like some of our local politicians might lead you to believe. However, of course, the engines that were built in 1959 are not state-of-the-art. But what they are is they're a double type of propulsion locomotive that can run on diesel power, which turns an electrical generator, which drives the train, or they can run on power supplied from a third rail. So what they want to institute is instead of running the third rail all the way out to Port Jefferson, as an interim policy to appease the people that want faster service on the line, and indeed they do need faster service, they're going to get a couple of these locomotives and trains, and they'll run them with the diesel power until they hit the third rail at Huntington, and then from Huntington they'll be able to run the trains on third rail power into Jamaica or right into Penn Station.
That seems logical to me. I don't know why they can't just, at this point, change engines.
They changed the trains at Huntington. That's the problem, you know.
Of course, there's no electric engines that they can use.
Yeah.
Well, and what if, can't the electric cars simply gently bump into a nice diesel that's waiting at Huntington?
Well, you know, I've often thought of the same thing because they have such a thing as a compromised coupler, and a diesel engine can be equipped with a compromised coupler, and theoretically, without knowing much of the mechanical workings of it all, theoretically it could pull the electric train to the destination.
But then, of
course, you know, a lot of these things that are halfway measures, they really don't save that much time. And I wonder just how many millions of dollars the railroad and the politicians are willing to spend on all these things that might save the people 5 or 10 minutes. Is that terrifically large amount of money spent wisely for just such a small savings? I don't know.
Well, we'll have to leave it at that, at least for you anyway. We're going to get some more calls.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank
I'll be listening to the rest of your show.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 7 minutes after 11 o'clock.
Boy, it's that late already, huh?
It's that, well, I'll tell you, when you talk about trains, it just...
Yes.
It's incredible how the time flies, especially if you're on a train. Boy, time flies when you're on a train.
Right.
I take the train into the city a lot now, and I'm never bored. I always find something to do. I go up and down the cars, visit with people, and
just look
out the window.
Do you really go up and talk to people, though?
Sometimes.
Really? Strangers? You just go up
and usually they come up and talk to me. I don't know why that is, but there's all kinds of bizarre people that get on the train.
When I travel around the country back...
People that have obviously never been on trains before in their lives.
Yes, yes.
When I traveled around the country back in 1979... went down to Los Angeles and up to Duluth, Minnesota, and Florida, and various places in between. It was kind of neat because you had all these people that couldn't get off the train for at least another couple of hours because that would be where the next stop would be.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to kind of go and socialize. There's really not much else you can do. And I remember eating dinner across the table from a farmer from Kansas. It was kind of neat. You know,
that's great.
The people that you meet on a train.
Well, I think there's nothing better than sitting in one of those dining cars and just looking out the window and seeing the world go by. Where else can you do that? You can't do that on a plane.
That's right.
You can't really do it on a boat because you don't go over land.
No.
There's, you know, No other place you can do it.
You can't do it on the Port Jefferson Ferry.
No, you can't.
Nope.
You sure as heck can't.
No.
Well, our phone number is 632-6901. We have something that's kind of appropriate, since the person was talking about people that don't seem to really consider crossing over train tracks that are blocked off. This might help refresh their memory.
I'm Phoebe Cates, and I'd like to tell you about Billy.
I'll be right there, man.
You probably know guys just like him. Confident, lots of friends. And when he promised to do something or be somewhere, he delivered. You could bet your life on it.
Come on, go around it.
Let's go, Billy. Hurry, go for it.
Got it. All right, let's go.
Here's what Billy didn't know. Every year in this country, about 1,000 people die and over 4,000 are injured at railroad crossings. People don't stop. They don't pay attention. They just don't think that the law applies to them.
You should know that these trains travel at 80 miles an hour and that you're 40 times more likely to die here than in any other type of traffic accident. So, if you think you've got what it takes to beat the odds, think again.
That's right. Think again, because trains hurt when they hit you. I mean, I don't know why people don't realize that.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Mike. Your microphone's in a weird place. That's why I keep forgetting to turn you on.
Thank you. A friend of mine gave me a book, a listing of summaries of all the accidents that occurred in car versus train versus train, train derailments, all the wrecks that occurred back in, say, 1986. And can you turn the train down a little bit?
How's that?
That's much better. Thank you. All the wrecks that occurred back in 1986 that were investigated by the Federal Railroad Administration, these are booklets that you can get from the Government Printing Office or from the FRA. I'm not
Freedom of Information Act, you can do it.
That's right. And invariably, the car versus train accidents, the cause was persons drove around the lowered gates, or persons did not heed the warning signals or what have you. And always listed fatalities. And you go down page and page and page after fatality and fatality and fatality. And damages, of course, people's cars were totaled, but they didn't really take that into consideration. They didn't consider it a cost to society. But they listed the damage to railroad equipment, and normally it wasn't more than $20 for a broken step.
Incredible. What about lost revenue, not making the station on
time? Well, you see, that's considered as cost to society, and they didn't really consider that at all.
Well, you know, I think part of the reason people drive around the things is because sometimes, and this is particularly true on Long Island, the train stops and waits for another train, and it's already kicked in the signal, so it stands there for about 10 minutes with the signal down and the train not going through. I think in Northport that happens quite a bit. So people get impatient, and they have driven around. I've seen people drive around because the train just never seems to come.
I was actually on a train that, when I was going up to Duluth, a car ran around the gates, and we killed everybody that was in the
really?
Car. Yeah. Yeah.
You were on the train?
Yeah, I was on the train.
Did you feel any...
No, actually, the only thing... I was asleep at the time. Mm. I was sitting in the last car, and... the train was rocking. It's a nice, gentle way of going to sleep.
Mm.
And then next thing I know, the train had stopped, so I'd gotten up, and I had to kind of like go to the bathroom, which is located at the end of the back end of the car. And as I was getting towards the bathroom there, I looked out the back window, and I saw all the flashing lights.
Oh, wow.
And sure enough, I saw the front of the engine when we got to Duluth, and in the grime on the front of the engine was actually the imprint of a tire.
Wow.
And there was blood and glass and stuff all over the engine, too. So
632-6901 is our phone number.
Thought,
no, it's not. If you have any train stories or comments or things like that, good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Well, you guys are doing a fantastic job. It's amazing the stories I'm hearing about the train. I never knew. You guys do a community service, and I just want to thank you for the great job you're doing. You know, I just came here from India, and we have no trains in India.
You have no trains?
Really?
No, wait a minute.
Didn't you used to have trains in India?
I saw Jewel and the Crown, and they were riding in trains. Very crowded trains.
Part of India where I was, we just had buggies and hookers.
Really?
I was just turning down the dial. Usually listeners Screaming Scotty and Mike Maxwell on WROX, a pirate radio station, which is fascinating. I don't know if you've ever heard of their radio station.
This sounds like a veiled promo for another show here. But go ahead. We're interested in it.
Well, they're simulcasting your show sometime. You know, they talk about you. They love you. You're beautiful. America is beautiful. Mike Maxwell, Screaming Scotty, WROX rules. Your station is a cheap imitation. You steal them, you don't belong in the airwaves.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Sure. Yeah, so it was nice while it lasted. 632-6901. Mike, do you want to go to this this Steve Goodman song?
No, what about the other one song that you had on the
I don't have that one queued up.
I thought you were going to queue that up next.
Oh, that's right. I said I was, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, I'll have to do that then.
Well, then why don't we continue talking? Why don't we, if you'd like, or would you go to the Steve Goodman song?
Well, we can go to the Steve Goodman song and then go to the other song.
That'd
because
be
they're
fine.
Both good songs.
Well, then why don't we just do that?
You want to give us some background on the Steve Goodman song?
Yeah, this is the City of New Orleans.
City of New Orleans.
The one that he wrote that Arlo Guthrie had a great big huge hit at. And you'll if you've never heard this particular version of it, you'll say, boy, this sounds interesting. You know, it sounds familiar, and that's because he wrote it.
The original version of City of New Orleans. And if you'd like to call us up and talk about trains, give us a call. The phone will ring until we come back from the song, but you won't have to pay a penny because we won't pick up the phone.
And the phone is 632-6901.
Area code 516. We'd particularly like to hear from people in other parts of the country. We realize that our signal is limited to Long Island and Connecticut, but... I mean, if you have a relative out in Iowa or something that knows something about trains,
call them up and tell them to call us.
Was that cable system in Wisconsin? We get 12 people there. It's a start. It's not much, but there are other places in the world that hear us. Yeah,
and
people
and
tape us and send
actually,
us abroad.
Actually, Iowa, you know, there is an area code in Iowa that is very similar to the area code which we are now in.
515.
That's right. So don't call that. Call us at 516.
632-6901. And do it now. Steve Goodman and the original version of City of New Orleans.
Riding along in the City of New Orleans, Illinois Central Monday morning rail. There are 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors and 25 sacks of mail. They're all out on southbound Odyssey, and the train pulls out of Kankakee. Rolls past the houses, farms, and fields. Past some towns that have no name, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of rusted automobiles. Singing, good morning, America, how are you? Saying, don't you know me, I'm your native son. Yes, I'm the train they call the City of New Orleans. And I'll be gone 500 miles and day is done. And I was dealing cards with the old men in the club car. And it's penny a point, there ain't no one keeping score. Won't you pass that paper bag that holds that bottle? You can feel the wheels grumbling through the floor. And from the Pullman borders, the sons of engineers, they ride their father's magic carpet made of steam. And mothers with the babes asleep go rocking to the gentle beat. The rhythm of the rails is all they dream. Just a singing, good morning, America, how are you? Saying, don't you know me, I'm your native son. And I'm the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles a day, son. Time on the City of New Orleans, changing cars to Memphis, Tennessee. If halfway home, we'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling to the sea. And all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream. The old steel rail, it ain't hurt the news. The conductor sings his song again. If passengers will please refrain, this train's got the disappearing railroad blues. Just a singing, good night, America, how are you? Saying, don't you know me, I'm your native son. And I'm the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles and days done.
And that is Steve Goodman with the original version of City of New Orleans. Fine song, that is. Fine song.
I'll have chicken chow mein.
Yeah, you know, I think I will have some fried rice.
Oh, just are we ordering food again?
Just some sub-gum fried rice.
If you could communicate.
Just a very small sub-gum.
They want fried rice and sub-gum something or other.
One fried rice, one, right?
Yeah, sub-gum fried rice.
Sub-gum fried rice.
Small ones.
Small chicken chow mein.
Small chicken chow mein. Why don't we just have the Chinese place listen to our show and just listen to what we asked for, you know?
You know, that's interesting because...
sub-gum rice, fried rice, one chicken chow mein.
Right.
I understand. Are we still being pumped after all throughout the building? Or have people started complaining?
Yes, everyone knows what we're eating.
Well, that's good then. But we're being pumped into this Stony Brook Student Union lobby.
To a certain level.
Yes. Not cranked up at 10 anymore.
It was blasting before.
It was blasting.
I was very upset. I stepped out near the hallway and during the classical program, and I became very disturbed. I thought to myself, my gosh, people are actually listening to the music I'm playing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
It was pretty disturbing.
I almost made ready to leave town. You know, I was afraid of the consequences.
Well, we turned down the volume a little bit. That means we'll just have to talk a little louder.
Okay.
Okie
doke. So that's one chicken chow mein.
But there's a science fiction convention going on right now, even as we speak, both in this building and in the Javits Lecture Center. Unfortunately, I brought all this information up with me, but somebody took it out of the newsroom.
Wow.
You found it? Where was it? Who took it? I want their name, Susan.
Susan took it.
Wow. Someone took all the information out. But we do have a public service announcement, which we'll be playing at the end of the show, giving you all kinds of information about the convention. It's going on tomorrow. We've got, what's his name, Batman downstairs, I think, and they'll be showing Star Trek tomorrow, and it's really pretty wild. And if you want to see some bizarre people, come on by. Come on by, because there's always bizarre-looking people here at Stony Brook.
And you don't even have to come into the radio station.
No.
Not this time.
We encourage you not to, in fact. But here we go, Icon 7. Icon 7 is a whole big booklet that someone graciously donated to me, and... Adam West, yes, he's the guy that plays Batman.
Played
Batman. That's right. It's not on anymore. I gotta get used to that.
Okay.
And there's a whole big schedule here, which we'll go over a little later as to what's happening tomorrow and everything. It's kind of confusing, but it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff. Our phone number is 632-6901. We're talking about trains, and give us a call if you have any questions or comments or criticisms or whatever.
Now, you were going to talk about subways.
Subways. Now, well, there's this whole big aura about trains. We all like to, the three of us, I mean, we all like to go out and watch trains go by. When I go down to visit you in Philadelphia, we always go and watch the Amtraks go by at 120 miles an hour. Then we drive a few miles and
not even, just a couple of blocks. A
couple of blocks, and we watch the B&O freight lines go by. How many cars are on those B&O lines?
Well, actually, it's not the B&O anymore. It's CSX.
CSX?
Yeah.
What does that stand for?
It doesn't really stand for anything.
Oh. I like them for that. Wow. Let's just pick three letters at random.
Yeah, that's basically what they did.
That's pretty incredible.
I believe actually expensive marketing campaigns for them.
I believe actually the C stood for Chessie system, S for Seaboard system, which were the two that merged, and X is
and
like
X for the unknown, like
9X.
Like
9X, right.
Well, now, subways, I don't know why it is.
But you ask me a question, and usually 100 cars or more.
100 cars or more?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, subways are different. For some reason, the people that are into freight lines and Amtraks and watching them go by aren't into subways. I never could understand that. I can understand why people who are into real trains aren't into toy trains.
Let me ask you this question.
What's that?
Since you're so much into subways and to freight trains and to high-speed passenger trains, are you also into trolley cars?
Not as much.
Yes,
that is weird. I'm not into that as much.
Well, I have to say, and I'm not just doing it for the sake of what you mentioned, I am into high-speed passenger trains, commuter trains, freight trains, subways, trolleys, electric buses, regular buses,
trackless trolleys.
Trackless trolleys. I just happen to be into all them. Toy trains.
I like toy trains because they look so much like the real ones.
Are you talking about toy trains or model railroading?
Well, that's what I mean. Model.
There is a difference.
A difference.
I even like model railroading. You know, scale and non-scale. I even like snap trains.
Well, I don't like Lionels. I'll say that right here and now because they don't look like real tracks. You show me three tracks in a row. I mean, that's the most basic thing. The track. If they get that wrong, why do you have any respect?
But I even like that. I loved Snap Trains. One of my earliest, most pleasant memories is a very, very, very young child, about 3 years old, was going over to the home of a friend, and it was great because she had these Snap Trains. She was like a very, you know, she was like an older woman. She was like 4 years old, you know. And I was three. And nice kid. And she had these Snap Trains, and we would play with these Snap Trains.
Could you just tell us exactly what are Snap Trains?
Yeah, I was about to ask that.
Well, what they are, they're wooden toys. What they are molded in the shape of like steam engines and freight cars and passenger cars.
Oh, and they have those little wheels snaps on them for the couplers.
Right, the couplers. And they have tracks that snap together, and they had grooves that the wheels fit in, and you could pull them along. It was a very safe way for you.
Remember when toys were so simple?
The snaps that they use, are they the ones that usually you have in your jackets and stuff?
Basically, yes. Yeah. Basically.
The same engineers designed those, I think.
But there was an automatic braking device that if you went too quickly, it unsnapped. It was a lot of fun.
Now,
and
I'll say right here, though, I mean, I love subways. I really do, especially New York subways. They are the best. I mean, they're grimy, they're filthy, they're dirty, but they work. They work. They're so complicated.
Absolutely.
I was just commenting yesterday in Penn Station to somebody that they put
it's
up all these...
a stranger, I'm sure.
Well, you know, everyone's a stranger to a degree, but there are these new signs up that point to the Long Island trains and everything that the MTA has put up, but have they gone over and replaced the old subway signs that say double A, double C, trains that no longer exist, and they're directing people to them? The double A train is now a K train. The double C is now a C. That's not too hard to figure out, but how are you going to know a double A is a K? How are you going to know that? They can't just put a little dot over the double A and make it a K. That's all they have to do. And it's been like this for years.
Hmm.
Newsday the other day. Newsday, a respected paper, 10th largest circulation, I believe, in the whole country. And they refer to the Canarsie line as the double L train. It hasn't been a double L train in years. Which is confusing because it is an L in some places, but it's underground in other places.
Now, please correct me if I'm wrong here, but there is no such thing as the IRT or the IND or the BMT anymore.
Well, that's not exactly true.
It's all part of the MTA, though, isn't
it? That's true, but everyone still calls it that.
Technically, they do have a certain division organization.
No, I think that was all abolished, and I thought it was all merged onto one group. Now, of course, historically, certain lines are known as IRTs and independent. And
well, not so much the BMT and the IND, but the IRT always stands apart simply because they're the numbered line.
Right, and I think that the BMT and IND had more... Now, I was under the impression that the track gauge was narrower on the IRT.
It is.
And
it's different.
That's why there really isn't much interest.
The track is the same, but the cars are wider.
That's right.
So on the BMT track gauge, and the IND.
The track gauge is 4'8.5".
And here's a trivia question. Oh. Let me see if either one of you gentlemen know it, and if you don't, we'll open it up to the callers. Is there any station, and if so, which one, that has the IRT and... the BMT / IND sharing the same platform?
Yes.
Which one is it?
Queensboro Plaza.
Very good. That's the only one as far as I know.
Oh, really?
I have never found another one. If anyone knows of another one where the IND or BMT and the IRT share a platform, please let us know about that, because that's very unusual.
Hmm. Yes, it is, actually. I think so. But you said that the cars are wider.
It's rather beautiful, too, when you think of it.
It is, actually. Matter of fact, I have a couple of very nice memories of visual at night, visual impressions that come to mind. But there's a telephone ringing. So
okay, we are going to get to that call. We're going to get to that call. But I'd like to say that on Queensboro Plaza, you can even see where the old 2nd Avenue L, I believe it was the 2nd Avenue L, it used to go across the bridge, and there are these structures that still remain to this day. And on the other side, I'm told there are more structures that you can see attached to the bridge.
This is the 59th Street Bridge?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Those little side roads used to be used by a train.
Didn't they used to run trolley cars over that bridge?
Yes.
Maybe that, too.
Maybe that, yes.
I hope somebody who was around in those days calls us and sort of corrects us as to what we're probably getting wrong.
We won't know until we pick up the phone.
Okay, we've got a couple of calls here. I just would like to update the people on the subway mess-ups. This was in Newsday today, and it's always fun to see what they're doing with subways. The MTA has announced the following changes to subway schedules because of the closing of the Waynesburg Bridge, and boy, what a foul-up that's causing.
Yes. Oh, boy.
The J-Line, which is always confusing, is operating from the 121st Street Station in Queens to the Myrtle Avenue Station in Brooklyn. It's stopping there. The M route is operating from the Metropolitan Avenue station in Queens to the Marcy Avenue station in Brooklyn. Manhattan-bound service on the L line has been doubled, so it's now going to be called the Double L again, to allow former riders of the disrupted J and M line.
Frankfurt and out towards 69th Street, it's elevated.
And isn't there also a one of the few remaining genuine interurban trolley lines?
Yes,
to Norristown.
Right. That's the Norristown High Speed. That's right. The Norristown High Speed line that goes from 69th Street out to Norristown. It's about 13-14 miles.
That's the one that crashed a few years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, there were a few crashes on that. In fact, you and I, we actually rode on that.
Yeah, I remember going to Norristown. That's kind of not a very nice area.
They're actually building a big hub, transportation hub. Much, I guess, akin to what they're doing at Ronkonkoma out there, but they'll have the PNW, they called it the Philadelphia Western, the Norristown High Speed Line is going to be the center.
Now, I can't help but notice we've lost all of our calls, and I'm sorry about that, probably because of my subway story. Please call us back. We'll get right to you. 632-6901, area code 516. We're talking about trains and subways. And, Mike, you showed me last time I was in Philadelphia some bizarre track setup that crossed like a T, and you said that was the only one in the country.
Oh, yeah, that's
what
right.
Is that?
That's where the B&O, I'm sorry, the CSX line,
yeah.
The main line between Philadelphia and Baltimore, crosses at grade the Route 11 trolley car line. So
wow.
You actually have a mainline railroad crossing a trolley line. That's the only place in the country, as far as I know, where that actually occurs.
Okay, well, let's go to the phone. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, I hear you talking about commuters and everything.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, I was wondering if you would play something for me.
Well, we're not playing music, but we can pass it on and maybe play it towards the end of the show.
Okay, how about the Roaches, the Commuter Train?
Commuter train, that's one of my favorite songs.
Oh, I love the Roaches. Aren't they great?
They're amazing. Well, are they still around? Do they put out records?
My friend saw them. She goes to Newport. She saw them. Or she heard of them up there a couple of weeks ago, and I know they're playing the city sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
But I love them. I think they're great. I've followed them for a couple of years now.
Uh-huh. Well, Commuter Train is one of my favorite songs.
Well, I commute to Stony Brook, so it has special significance.
Do you take a train?
No, by car, but still, just the same.
Uh-huh. Well, you've taken a train, I assume.
Oh, yeah, to the city.
Yeah? Well, what's that like? I mean, do you like taking the train to the city?
I always fall asleep, because I fall asleep in cars, too.
See, that's something I can never do. I can never fall asleep while I'm moving.
Oh, I can.
I think it stems back from childhood.
Well, I don't know. Somebody once told me that, you know, the earth is moving and everything, and I got insomnia for about a week. I'm that out, but...
Well,
once I got over that...
Yeah. So you're not falling asleep on that.
I can't fall asleep in trains, in cars, not even trucks, buses, nothing, you know? It's really hard to fall asleep when you're moving.
Eric?
Yeah.
Have you ever taken a long-distance train?
Yeah, I took a train about a year and a half ago from South Carolina to Boston.
Ooh.
And I might have slept for an hour or two, but I really had trouble falling asleep. Mm-hmm. I really did. And I wanted to, you know? It was really pleasant. It wasn't uncomfortable, but I just had trouble falling asleep because I was moving.
Hmm.
But that's my problem. I don't want to pass it on to anybody else. I'll deal with it.
Okay.
Thanks
well,
for calling.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, we'll try to get to that later on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'll keep listening.
That would be good. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Good to have people who listen, you know?
That's right.
632-6901. It's also good to have people who call and call us up with train stories or ideas, things like that. Do we have any other train stories, or have we run out of them?
Oh, we have plenty here, but where do we start?
Well, yeah, now,
can I tell you about the new SEPTA timetables?
Well, tell us what SEPTA is. Most people here don't know.
SEPTA stands for Southeastern Pennsylvania's Transportation Authority.
It also stands for Special Education Parent Teacher Association,
yes.
But they're not related.
But in this context, it does stand for SEPTA.
Okay.
Everybody calls it SEPTA down there.
We do have another call. We don't want to lose it.
Okay, why don't we go to the call?
All right. But I want to hear your story. I mean, I don't want to put you off.
You'll get it. Don't worry.
Okay. Good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Hi, this is John Tabey again, and I'm continuing to listen to you. And I just wanted to make a comment about something you said on the outset of your show. You were talking about the railroads and the post office. And I wondered whether you had ever given any thought to the fact that if it wasn't for the post office, we may still have been running a lot more long-distance trains, and maybe Amtrak never would have had to come into existence.
We would have still been running long-distance trains? I mean, the post office somehow hurt the long-distance trains?
Well, what happened was is that there was a period of time in the United States when a lot of the mail that was being sent across the United States was being handled on the trains. And of course, at one time when the government was running the post office, they were actually subsidizing the trains by giving the trains the mail to haul. Of course, it was advantageous to the post office also because they had their postal clerks on board the train sorting the mail while the trains were en route to their destination. So,
the old railway post offices.
Exactly. Well, the service was actually called the Railway Mail Service, but the common term was the RPO, which was the Railway Post Office.
Now, when did that stop?
Well, that came about in the administration of President Kennedy, and he took the mail off the trains, and what happened was is that there were so many trains that were running with very little business. They were so marginal that the railroads began to petition the ICC to take the trains off. So if it wasn't for the fact that the government took the mail contracts away from the railroads, a lot of those trains would have continued to run. Now, I'm not saying that the post office shouldn't have done that, but it's my contention also that at the same time, how many airline flights would be canceled if it wasn't for the fact that they were carrying mail?
Uh-huh.
Interesting point.
Interesting.
So it's, you know, the government helps in one way, but they hinder in another way, and it's probably just a little bit of the system. But nevertheless, I just thought it was interesting that you combined the post office with the railroads in the beginning of the show.
Hmm. Oh, well, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you. All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye. 632-6901.
Okay, now let me tell you about the timetables now.
Go ahead.
They had, up until this last revision, which was this month, had a skyline of the city of Philadelphia in the background, or actually up on the top part here. And they didn't show the new skyscraper that's above...
Want to hold
William
that
Penn's
up for the audience? I see.
That's above William Penn's hat. Remember, we were discussing that once before, too.
Uh-huh.
But now they've gone away from that. Now, SEPTA has a logo that looks like a stylized S, and it's sort of in the little rectangle. And their new slogan is, "We're getting there," because they've been plagued by problems and stuff, and they're thinking they're on the track to recovery here. So they've come up with this ad campaign that says, "We're getting there," and what it shows is this SEPTA emblem.
The little engine that could.
The SEPTA S emblem actually... it appears to be in motion. You see how sometimes in the comic strips you see like little motion lines that you don't see a little cloud of dust here. I'm just trying to explain this logo. Well, what they've done is they've taken that a step further and they've put a train or a bus or a subway, depending on the service or the timetable, and they actually have that duplicated and set on top of one another and on top of one another, and it looks like the train or bus or trolley is skidding across the paper.
You'll have to bring that in later.
Yes, I will. Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. Do you remember the Dashing Dan?
Oh, sure.
I mean, I don't know if many people remember
the root
that.
Of the Dashing Commuter.
The root of the Dashing. Well, it was the Dashing Dan, right? Is that what they called it?
Yeah,
on
Dashing
the train?
Dan was.
It was actually printed on all the Long Island Railroad trains.
It said the root of the Dashing Commuter.
And then they had also had another emblem with a. I forgot what the name. There was a name assigned to the woman figure, but there was a figure of a woman. As a dashing commuter also, as women
dashing Danielle.
Increased in the workforce. Yeah. Yeah, somebody, as a matter of fact, there was, for a time, a giant version of the little... They used to have that little buttons that you could wear, little promotional buttons with Dashing Dan on them.
Do you have one?
Boy, if anyone has those buttons,
I'd like one.
I might have it one time, but that, I mean, this is way back, and I don't think I have it anymore.
Mike Uhas will grant you immortality if you give us one of those buttons.
They just hand out M buttons now.
Yeah, yeah, but this is right. This is
of course, you turn it upside down, you know, it could be something else.
Now, something that I think is very interesting that we should point out here that I only learned a few weeks ago, and that it pertains to people who take the trains out here, the diesel trains. You always notice there's two engines, or most of the time. In rush hours, there isn't, and we can get into that later.
Mm-hmm.
A push and pull. Now, a lot of people don't realize this, but it's that big, loud engine that's either in the back or the front. It's always facing east. It's always on the eastern half of the train. That is the one with all the power. It's either pulling the train or it's pushing the train.
That's the one that has the tractive effort.
Yes, the one in the front. I mean, it may be in the front or it may be in the back, depending on which way the train is going.
The one with the USB bumper sticker on it.
If the train is going west... The engine in the front is not pulling it,
It's simply controlling it. The one in the back right. is pushing it.
And there's
if
more
it's going,
than that.
Well, if it's going in the east, you can explain that in a second. If it's going to the east, the one in the front, which is the big loud one, is pulling it, and the one in the back isn't doing much of anything.
No, with the
and
the one in the back,
have the driver in it.
With the one in the back, the other one, that has a generator in it that's actually supplying electricity for light and heating and air conditioning in those cars.
Yeah. Now, okay, that leads me to a question then.
Mm-hmm.
When during rush hour, but they only have one engine, which perhaps you could explain why they only have one engine during rush hour, how do they get electricity then?
Okay, each of those cars has a little diesel under the car power plant that generates electricity itself.
You mean in the passenger car?
Yeah, each of those passenger cars has a little diesel engine.
So then why don't they use that little diesel engine instead of the big engine?
Say again, when?
Oh. When they have two engines, why bother using the other
because,
engine?
Because the cars that they use for the push-pulls were actually, at one point, electric cars that had third rail shoes that used to go out to West Hempstead and Hempstead and all that.
Uh-huh.
And even to places like Mineola and Babylon. And so they had this, when they got these M1 cars starting in the late 60s, they had the surplus of these old cars, and so they converted them into diesel haulage by taking off the third rail shoes and piping electricity through them to turn on the lights and heating and air conditioning.
But that doesn't answer the question.
Oh, you want to know
why don't they use the diesel engines or the diesel generators underneath the trains instead of using the diesel generator from the other engine?
I think I understand what the question is, and I think I can answer it. But what Eric is wondering is why it's necessary to have the generator, the large engine looking generator.
When you have a generator,
when you already have generators in all the
because
cars,
they don't have generators in all the cars.
Oh, they don't.
That's what I just said.
So you're saying the cars that they use during rush hour are different from the cars they use? I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, because the cars that they use during rush hour have diesel power plants underneath them.
Oh, okay.
And the other ones were old converted electric cars that they used to run out to Hempstead.
So the ones that are sandwiched between the diesels don't have those little generators underneath
them. That is correct.
Okay, I have just learned something. 1141, I have learned something at this moment.
They're the ones that used to run into Penn Station, into Brooklyn and stuff, and through the tunnels, and you couldn't bring diesel power plants into underground lines.
But you can bring New Jersey Transit engines into Penn Station.
They're electric.
Okay, because I hear them blowing their horns sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a scary thing. It's also...
In fact, those engines used to be Amtrak engines.
I've noticed that. I've seen them pulling Amtrak trains.
Mm-hmm.
They, like, mate or something. I don't know. But it's interesting to see New Jersey Transit trains on Long Island.
Because they keep them right out of the sunny side yard there, which at one point was the largest passenger terminal yard in the whole world.
Now, a few weeks ago, Jim and I were talking about the circus train, the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus.
I saw one of them in Virginia a couple weeks ago.
I saw a car that said Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey on it after I had this conversation. Maybe you know something more about this.
What color was the writing? Was it blue or red?
I think it was red.
Okay, well, then that was the red unit train you've seen.
There's two different units, or maybe even three different units in the circus.
One's blue and one's red.
How does that... What is the station? They have
different itineraries.
There are different trains?
Yeah, depending on where that particular circus group is.
It's like different
farm
teams, you know?
Yeah.
But, I'd like to get to that in a second. Let's give out the phone number one more time.
632-6901.
We know it. Maybe the folks out there don't know it or something, or they don't want to interrupt our fascinating stories. It's okay. We want to hear from you. We want you to be a part of the conversation. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You are on Brain Damage.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Sounded like a recording. Is there some kind of metal program tonight?
That's later on at night. That's about 3 o'clock in the morning or so.
3 o'clock?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. Thanks for being on the air.
Well, that was somewhat related to trains. Trains have metal in them.
That's true.
Heavy metal at that.
Yeah.
Perhaps what we should clarify. Give us a call, but say something relevant.
About trains.
About the trains, about the program.
Anything about transit.
Yes, 632-6901. We only have about 15 minutes left, so we would like to hear from you. Now, we had said
before... I want to talk about freight trains. We've been talking about passenger trains the whole night. I want to talk about freight trains for a little while.
Well, okay.
What move America's goods.
True. Orange juice, for instance.
For one, yes. Refrigerators for another.
Now, the circus for a third, because... We were talking about this the other night, and Jim said the circus train is the longest train in the world. Now, do you know anything about that, Mike?
I heard that from a conductor.
Nah, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Oh.
Well, I'm glad we shattered that myth.
It may be a very long passenger train, but if you look at a circus train, you'll see that it has a whole bunch of passenger trains up in passenger cars in the front. And then in the back, it has all this piggyback stuff with their circus trucks and so forth. I don't know how they actually bring the elephants around. I'm not sure if they go on the train.
Through the Midtown Tunnel. Through the Midtown Tunnel, the elephants go there. And I want to know when they're going to do that next, because I want to watch this.
So they don't take the train then?
They do. They take the train, but then they let them off near the Sunnyside Yards, and then take them through the streets and take them under in at like about 2:30 in the morning. They have like a convoy, and they take them through the Midtown Tunnel.
I think we should go tonight
Midtown
and
Manhattan.
Check it out. Well, if we left here at midnight,
well,
we could
they don't
be,
do it every
but
night.
I don't think they're doing it every night. You say, I think they stay in Madison Square Garden.
Well, when does the circus end? We can figure this out.
I think it's...
if anyone knows this, please call us.
Beginning of June, I think, something like that.
June, okay, I intend to be there.
Or maybe it's... No, maybe it's in May. Maybe it's the beginning of May.
Mm. I intend to be there, and I intend to bring other people there, too, because this is something important.
Good point.
You part of our heritage. Do you think you can get to walk through the tunnel with the... With
I
the,
don't think so, but I guess you
could disguise yourself as
it.
A handler or something, huh?
Disguise us. Hey, we could... If we get an even number of us... half of us could put on a head part of a costume, and the other half of us could put on a tail part of the costume, and there we could join the circus and see the world.
It's to be expected of us, you know, to do something like this.
Yeah.
But I imagine that it's through trial and error that they finally managed to figure out that was the best way. They probably tried bringing them over the bridge once, and that didn't work out.
Yeah,
they
that's a good
probably
point.
Tried to put them on the 7 once or twice, and that didn't work out. But now... Going through the Midtown Tunnel, I guess that's... I mean, that ends up on the expressway. Where do they go from the expressway? Do they walk from the expressway to Sunnyside Yards? It's a long
well,
walk.
I think that they can... I don't know if it's... I guess it must be near the Sunnyside Yards. I guess it must take them through local streets and then must end up...
Well, that's one of the advantages of living in Queens.
Yeah.
Elephants walking down the street.
Yeah. And then I guess they take them to the tunnel.
Huh. Well, that's pretty. I do want to see this. I'm serious about that.
Yeah, that would be interesting to watch.
Elephants.
Definitely.
Now, I was in the 6th Avenue and 57th Street subway station last night.
Oh.
Very late at night, in fact. And it's a huge station.
6th yeah. Avenue and what?
And 57th.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big station, but it doesn't really have any trains. I mean, it has the S train, which is an old, decrepit-looking shuttle train that goes downtown. And it has the F train after 1 o'clock. And also
1 o'clock a.m. or p.m.?
A.m. And it has the JFK Express, which terminates there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they build the 63rd Street Tunnel, or finish the 63rd Street Tunnel, I was talking to somebody who worked in the tunnel last night.
Oh.
They said, and you can see the tunnel. You can look down the track, and you can see all these new lights, and everything looks spanking new and everything. But it's flooded, unfortunately. Unfortunately, they did not build the very nice tunnel, and they have to fix it. What's going to happen is the F train is going to come barreling through there, and instead of going with the E train
it's
over to Queens,
splash all the water everybody.
It's going to do a number on it.
Pontoons sprouted.
It's going to go around, stop at 5th Avenue up on 63rd Street, and then just go stop at Roosevelt Island, too, and then end up in Queens and rejoin where it joins the E train over by, I believe, 23rd and Ely Street. And that's something I learned last night about the subways.
I didn't know that.
Hmm. And it's about time, too, because we've been waiting for that tunnel to open up. Also, the J train has some new stops. They tore down the old L train in South Jamaica, but they've built an underground train. And, in fact, if you're on the Long Island Railroad going to New York, you can see new tracks to the on the side of the... But they just park trains there. They don't use it yet.
Hmm. Right. As a matter of fact, there was a plan. I don't know if it's still in effect, but there was a plan for that new line to at least temporarily use some of the Long Island Railroad trackage, I think, on the Atlantic branch between Jamaica and Valley Stream, the one that goes through Locust Manor and Laurelton.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's still in effect. But you're talking about the Super Express service that they're suspending on the JFK Express, at least temporarily, because of the Williamsburg Bridge situation.
Well, I mentioned that before. Yeah, they are suspending that.
That reminds me. Well, first of all, talking about the designations of the letters, apparently at one time a double letter meant a local and a single letter meant an express.
True.
And now that distinction is gone by the wayside. But there used to be a Super Express, you may remember, in the late 60s. That had a double letter designation NX. It was a Sea Beach, basically a Sea Beach line, but it was called the Super Express. It went from Brighton Beach, then stopped at Ocean Parkway and West 8th Street in Coney Island, and then at Stillwell Avenue, and then switched over onto Sea Beach trackage. It was on Brighton trackage first, then went over onto Sea Beach trackage, and then went to 57th Street. I think that I don't even know if it made any other stops after Stillwell Avenue, and I think it was supposed to go from Brighton Beach to Midtown Manhattan in something like about 20 minutes.
Wow.
Wow. And it was discontinued. There was this experiment they tried, I guess, 20, 30 minutes, I guess, at the most. It was,
well,
cause it was
now,
very, you know, just used a track, and a clear track.
If you do what I do, and you get on the trains late at night, you can go into a car and play with the signs.
And I thought they had a lock on them.
You can see. No, they don't. Well, the new ones do, but the old ones don't. And you can just spin them around, see all the trains that are there, and you can see things like Super Express.
Yes,
and
that's right.
It says World's Fair sometimes.
Yes.
And Aqueduct Raceway. But there was one in particular which caught my attention. It said the train, 6th Avenue Local or something like that.
V?
In Victor, yes.
Really?
Yes. Now, that train, and I've asked several people about it, and I could tell by the lettering, it was an orange letter, you know, which I think they adopted in the 1970s. And I've been around in the 1970s. I never saw a V train.
Oh.
I asked the train people, and they say, yes, that train was never put into service. It was planned, but it was never put into service.
Hmm. Can we talk about freight trains for a while?
Well, yes. I just want to say, when I'm on the S train with a bunch of people, usually we go down the whole train and change everything to a V, and it confuses people. Train pulls in, they see this V train here. It's kind of reminiscent of when they had a shortage of New York subway trains, and they borrowed trains from Staten Island Rapid Transit, and all these Staten Island Rapid Transit trains came barreling into Battery Park. And all these commuters were looking, what are these things doing here?
And remember when there was a shortage of Staten Island Rapid Transit cars, and they used Long Island Railroad cars?
I don't remember that, but I can believe it.
And remember when they had a shortage of flexible buses a few years ago?
And they used Washington buses?
That was good.
And I actually saw them driving up the New Jersey Turnpike in a great big convoy.
Well, if you were very lucky, you would have seen them delivering, I believe, something like 300 new subway cars by boat last week.
Oh, wow.
And they were lowering them down from the boat onto the ground. I believe this was somewhere in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
One other thing, a very nice cartoon in the New Yorker 2 weeks ago showed commuters. They have lots of subway related cartoons, but these commuters were, or just regular subway people, were standing at a subway platform, and coming around the corner was a bunch of puzzled looking people on a roller coaster. And it said something like Asbury Park in the front, and they looked really like, how did we get here?
But what about freight trains?
Well, okay, go ahead.
I mean, like, freight trains, this is how we move America's
yes.
goods. I mean, you come down to America's heartland, Philadelphia, no, or places along that line, and places that are more inland than Long Island, and you'll see freight trains galore, like trailer trains with 100 or more cars,
yeah.
Full of two trailers each. So you have 200 trailers that are not on the highways. And and then you'll see trains full of automobiles and all sorts of other things. This is a hobby of mine, going out to take pictures of trains.
And you take some pretty good pictures, too.
Yeah,
I must say. Very good pictures.
I didn't bring any tonight because I knew this was radio, not television.
Well, that's good, but they are good pictures.
And, I was out on a hill out in south central Pennsylvania this past weekend taking pictures.
Your pictures have been published, haven't
they? Yeah, I have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Out there, they're train magazines.
Yeah.
You want to tell us the names of some of them?
Well, there's Trains Magazine, for one. Mm. There's a CTC board, which is out of California, and they're now nationwide. I've had a couple pictures in there. Rail Pace magazine, they're out of Piscataway, New Jersey. They cover the Northeast Railroads. And I've had an article in there, two-part article. And those are a few.
Excellent.
So there's more than just model railroader out there.
And there's a lot of model railroad
and
magazines,
one,
too.
There's one that should be of particular interest to you is Passenger Train Journal.
Train Journal, that's incredible.
Right. Yeah. Yes, I'm thinking of getting a subscription to that.
Yeah, it's a good deal. Yeah.
Now, you were saying?
About freight trains?
Yes.
Basically, I just wanted to spark something here and see what kind of input I got from you folks. It's really kind of neat to see a train struggling up the Allegheny Mountains with five diesel engines on the head end and 100 cars and three pusher engines on the back pushing up a 2% grade at 10 miles an hour.
They use pusher things in the back of huge...
Yeah, rear-end helpers.
I have a recollection of going to Boston when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
On some kind of a train. I don't know what it was back then. This was maybe in the
probably
the
on the New Haven line.
I guess so, but
of course,
it was
the New
a
Haven
long. It was a really long train.
Yeah.
And I seem to recall getting off the train in Boston and
wait a minute. How old were you at the time?
I was about 8 years old, maybe.
So then you were smaller than you are now. So everything's relative.
Was. Well, that's true. But the train was long, and I seem to recall seeing engines in the middle of the train. Now, is that possible?
Was it a freight train?
I don't. Well, could it have been a freight train as well as a passenger train?
Well, probably not likely.
Because when I was a kid, I always imagined that they mixed them. And well, sometimes they had passenger cars and then coal cars in the front. And
sometimes they do. Did they had mixed trains mm-hmm. that ran on very very light passenger density lines that that run a train through once a day, and there'd be a coach, and there'd be a bunch of freight cars, and they'd switch out all the sidings as you went along. But they're all since longer running.
One thing that bothers me though, whenever I take a train ride anywhere, including Long Island, and you look out the window, you see all these old abandoned things, overgrown cars and tracks and pilings of ties and everything. And it seems like such a hopelessness there that you see. You know, people don't seem to want to take care of it. Is there a reason for that?
Have you ever taken Amtrak's Cardinal? It's a train that runs from New York to Chicago by way of Washington, D.C., and then down along the CNO, or actually it's CSX now.
Oh, boy.
Along the New River Gorge and through West Virginia and so forth. Boy, that's a beautiful, beautiful route. And
I could answer that by saying I've never been to Chicago. How's that?
Never.
Well, I passed through there once in a plane.
Oh.
You know, I'll bet your bottom dollar that you'd lose your blues in Chicago. You know, it's the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
Well, now, what was your point with Chicago?
I'm just saying, no, it's not so much Chicago, just the fact that you can ride a train and be away from some major cities and see some absolutely lovely scenery.
Yeah. Well, on the scenery, yes, they can't really mess up the scenery, but next
you mean
to
old train artifacts.
On the Long Island, for instance, you see those, what do you call them, turnoffs?
Spurs,
yeah, and they always just end up in overgrown grass.
Right, that bothers me a great deal.
And sometimes it's a car that's all burned out, and it's been sitting there ever since you were a kid, ever since your parents were kids.
Yeah. Did you know that there was a Long Island line that went from off the main line between New York and Jamaica that went off down to the right, down...
Are you going east?
Yes, down, heading south. I forget exactly where it is, but I'm sure you know where it is.
Yeah, north of Forest Hills.
That's right. It used to head down towards Kennedy Airport, that area. They never made it all the way down there, but
is that the old Rigo Park spur?
I'm not really sure.
Okay, I'm not sure because I know there used to be a lot of more Queen service and spurs, and Rigo Park was one of them on the Long Island Railroad. It used to be very heavily.
If you train, that used to go up to Creedmoor.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
If you take the A train,
if you want to get to Harlem.
Well, no. Go the other way. Broad Channel.
Oh.
Right
where it turns off, going down to Rockaway, you'll see that there's these other tracks that have been abandoned that go straight up towards Queens, or you are in Queens already, but go straight north. And I believe that was part of a Long Island line at one point.
It could have been, you know,
because the stone L in Rockaway used to be part of the Long Island service.
The what?
The stone elevated line.
Oh.
One of two, I believe two. There might be more stone elevated lines. The other one, of course, being the 7. In Sunnyside, I think stone elevated lines are incredible because it's a grade. It's not like an L, and it's elevated though.
Right,
and it's really solid and sturdy.
Yeah. It's like it's as if it was
built to last,
sculpted. Well, in other words, it's as if it was always there, like it's a natural phenomenon.
Well, you know, I was walking through Woodside the other day, underneath an L, a real L, real green L.
Hmm.
You know, they for some reason they're always green and they're loud and noisy. And I was just thinking as I was walking underneath this thing was built by people that are probably dead.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like this monument built by these people that no longer exist.
Their
sons just there.
Their sons and daughters are probably dead by now, too.
When was it built?
What, the 1800s?
No, it wasn't built that long.
Well,
ago.
I guess
1800s?
The early 1900s.
Early 1900s.
Well, you know, still close enough.
I mean, subways were invented in the late 1800s, I believe. But
well, did you know when the Long Island Railroad was first incorporated?
Yes.
No, I don't.
1834.
That is correct.
Now, before then or during then, they used to get out to Eastern Long Island by ferry. They would just keep stopping. They'd take the boat out and stop in
Did you know that
places.
The Long Island Railroad was actually envisioned, was actually first started as a bridge route, so to speak? You would take the Long Island Railroad out to Greenport, get on a ferry to go to New London or wherever, and then continue on to Boston?
Yes.
Because the shoreline along the southern Connecticut coast there, between, say, New London and New York, was considered too rugged to actually run trains through?
Incredible. Well, we are at the end of our time.
What time is it?
It's 11:58.
Oh,
and,
boy.
And we have a song to play that, Mike, you wanted to give us an intro to. Let me just outro us all by saying we've been with Jim Weiner, Mike Uhas, and myself, Eric Corley, talking about trains for the last 2 hours. We have to get together and do this again because there's just so much to talk about with trains. And I'm all into it now. I mean, I want to go out and watch some trains go by.
Well, I'm going to do that.
Yeah? You're going to do that here or are you going to go back home?
I'm going to go back home because where we see some real freight trains.
Well, we have some real freight trains here now. Yeah, they're starting to come back.
You have local freights, that's true.
Well, they're not little. I mean, they're big freights.
You don't have big trailer trains coming through Long Island, and you never will.
Well, that's a rather pessimistic way to end the program, but
no,
I guess you're right.
Well, like I was saying before here, I guess we're kind of to wrap up here, but the Cardinal that runs between New York and Chicago by way of Washington...
And that's another thing. They should name Long Island trains, too.
They used to. The East End trains that going out to...
They still have some.
They had the Cannonball.
They still have that.
Not the Wabash Cannonball.
Has anyone been on the parlor car service?
Yeah.
What's I've never been like? In a parlor car.
Going out to Montauk, you're in the parlor car. It costs like $14 more than the regular fare. But
it's, you got a lot of room.
What do you do?
You just sit and you drink.
But you can do that. You can do that on some rush hour trains going out here, and they don't charge you.
Well,
extra.
I mean, they come to your seat and they give you your drinks. Well, they
it's
sell
a
you
chair. It's not just, yeah, you know, it's a comfortable chair.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Do the cars look different?
Not appreciably. You know, they have a red stripe as opposed to a blue stripe.
Because I don't know if I've ever seen one of those cars go by.
Yeah, you'll know them if you see them because uh-huh. they've got a red stripe.
Okay, Mike, tell us your story.
Take the Cardinal between Washington and or New York and Washington and Chicago by way of West Virginia, and you'll be going through the New River Gorge, which is the name of this train song. It's called the New River Train. Who does it? Norman Blake and Tony Rice?
Yeah, Norman Blake and Tony Rice. And is there anything else you want to say? Because when I play this song, we won't be coming back.
That's all I wanted to say. It's a good train to ride. It's a really lovely scenery, a huge gorge that you go through.
Would you say this song wraps it all up as far as that train?
As far as that train is concerned, yes. And they actually ran some steam locomotives through there to develop a new generation of steam locomotive. They ran tests through there a couple of years ago.
Wonderful.
With a great big 2102, I guess it was.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Uhas, thanks very much for coming by, coming up to Philadelphia. I'm sure you took the train in.
No, I drove from Philly.
You drove?
Yeah.
Well, why didn't you take the train?
I should have. I got stuck in traffic on the Belt Parkway last night. We went through that already.
Okay. Jim, thanks very much for coming
by.
Thank you. We'll see you in 3 weeks.
Good night, Eric.
My pleasure.
And we'll be back next week with Brain Damage talking about God knows what. Who knows?
Planes,
trains, automobiles, all kinds of weird things like that. See you next week. Closing off with Norman Blake and Tony Rice. New River Train here. I'm looking at the record label. 1201, the brothers are next with Lobotomy. Stay tuned.
Riding on that New River train, that same old train that brought me here's going to carry me away up. Well, darling, you can't love one. You can't love one and have any fun. Oh, darling, you can't love one. Riding on that New River train. Riding on that New River train, that same old train that brought me here's gonna carry me away again. Yes, sir. Darling, you can't love too. Darling, you can't love too. You can't love too, and your little heart be true. Oh, darling, you can't love too. Riding on that New River train. Riding on that New River train. That same old train that brought me here's gonna carry me away again. Darling, you can't love three. Darling, you can't love three. You can't love three and be true to me. Oh, darling, you can't love three. Riding on that New River train. Riding on that New River train. That same old train that brought me here's gonna carry me away again.
jump on it, son. Riding on that new river train, that same old train that brought me here's going to carry me away again.
And now it's time for the Brothers on WUSB Stony Brook.
I often dream of trains when I'm alone. I ride on them into another sun. I dream of them constantly, heading for paradise, or Basingstoke, or Reading. I often dream of trains when I'm away. They ride side of frozen lake, and there in the buffet car I wait for eternity, or Basingstoke or Reading. I often dream of trains till it gets light, the summer turns to winter suddenly. The sun sets at 4 o'clock, exactly what I'm dreading. I often dream of trains when I'm with you. I wonder if you dream about them too. Maybe we'll meet one night.
down. When am I coming down?
My number phone, 5,000 miles away. I've spoken to my sister.
Caterpillar.